This happened to me last year when I was on a search and rescue mission. It was for a family who went missing 2 weeks ago. We received news from the police that they received a ping from a GPS tracking beacon. I gathered my team together to get ready to head out. "Hey, Covey, you got a light?" Carlton asked, cigarette hanging loosely from his mouth. Carlton and I always got along well since we were children. "Sure, I got one," I said as I handed him a matchstick. "What's the matter with your lighter?" he asked, taking a puff out of his cigarette. "Does it really matter?" I replied to him. "No, but I assume someone like you would have a lighter, not carry around matchsticks all the time." "Okay," I said, before we dove into another conversation. "Get everything ready to go so we can leave." He packed everything essential, such as a map, a compass, extra food and water, extra clothes, flashlights, a first aid kit, and a fire starter kit. We were ready to go. We got into our trucks and headed out for the woods from our base. As we headed into the woods, the clouds started getting darker and darker. "Looks like rain clouds," Carlton said, looking out the window with a blank expression. "Yeah, only the more reason to find that family fast," I responded. Carlton always had a hard time on these missions. I could tell. We got onto the main hiking trail, which would take us to where the beacon went off. We started walking with the rest of the group, which consisted of me, a 37-year-old man who looks older than who he is and seen way too much. Carlton, a 34-year-old with bright red hair and a sense of humor none of us have. Amy, a blonde-haired 28-year-old with big blue eyes and black glasses. Chris, a 47-year-old with dark gray hair and an attitude he would not want to fuck with. Charlotte, an 18-year-old with long brown hair and big brown eyes. Russell, a 58-year-old retired police officer who looked like he was 70. Corey, a 26-year-old with black hair shaved close to his head. Jack, a 42-year-old. He was incredibly traumatized by something from his past involving a hunting trip. And Zachary, an incredibly brave 39-year-old with a shaved head and lots of upper muscle. We all hiked along the trail, hoping the family would be alive.
"Hey, Kobe," Carlton said. "Do you have the feeling that something's wrong here?" Carlton asked.
"Yeah, I feel it too,"
Charlotte added. The rest of us didn't feel a thing. They were known for being paranoid on these missions, so we just continued on. Nightfall came quick, and the rain slowly started to fall. We never really saw any signs of disaster, and as we reached the area, we were all horrified. The site was destroyed, with scratch marks covering the trees around it. The tents were torn through, and all the items were scattered. Jack walked up to my side.
"What in the living hell happened here?"
he whispered to himself. The rain was heavily pouring now, so we put on our raincoats from our backpacks. That's when we heard a loud snapping noise behind us. We heard Carlton let out small whimpers as we all turned to see what he was looking at. We all froze instantly. We saw it in the trees, just staring at us. It was a tall, pale, brown creature with fur running down its back. It had what looked like tight skin stretched over a deer skull, with dark hollow sockets with glowing yellow eyes. It had two stubs where antlers would have once been, two very long arms stretching down to its calves, with long fingers reaching down to its bear-like feet. Its body was almost skeletal. It stood at least 10 feet tall. We all froze and slowly started to back away as the thing starts to approach us. The creature stood there, watching us with its beady eyes. It kept its distance until Carlton walked forward.
"Carlton, get your ass back!" Russell yelled. The creature reacted to Russell's words, charging, and too quick to realize, shoved its fingers through his chest. He gasped in pain, and Corey took off running. We were all frozen in terror. It looked at us and chuckled quietly. It removed its fingers from Russell's chest, and he dropped to the ground completely motionless. It was obvious Russell was dead. I felt a fit of rage and pulled out my revolver. I always had one on me. I shot the entire round of bullets into that creature's face. The creature toppled backwards, and we all turned and ran. I heard fast footsteps behind, then I felt a surge of pain in my back. It slashed down my back. I couldn't move my legs. Jack and Zachary grabbed me and picked me up and started running. The creature then attacked Amy. It grabbed her back and snapped her neck. Carlton spotted a cave as the creature swung back and charged at him. We made it to the cave before it could kill any more of us. It followed us into the cave as we retreated into the darkness. We came across an area that seemed to be easily collapsible, so we could save us some time. I took out my gun and shot the roof of the cave a few times, and the rocks fell, covering our exit. It would buy us some time for now. We started a fire and are still shaken up from what happened. I reassured Carlton and the others we would go back for the bodies if we could.
If we could? With that creature out there, it would kill us all if we left now, Jack said.
We don't even know if Corey is alive. He ran off,
Charlotte added.
We will suffocate if we stay in here, Zachary complained.
Oh, I'm sorry if you'd rather be torn apart, I argued.
I have a tracking beacon. I'll set it off when we...
There was a loud crash from the collapsed entrance. Rocks tumbled onto the ground. Another crash came, and all the rocks that blocked the exit fell to the ground. The creature stood there, keeping us closed in, and we all huddled together. The creature stood there with a smile spread across its face. It had something in its hand. It threw it to the ground, only to reveal it was Corey's head. Charlotte screamed, and Carlton bent over on his hands and knees. Corey's head still had his eyes open in terror. I still couldn't move my legs. The creature was standing there, and that's when I saw Zachary ramming into the creature. The creature fell over. Charlotte and Chris grabbed me and ran past the creature. They ran so fast with me, I thought it was impossible. We came to a river and saw a passageway underneath a waterfall. We hid there, and it had enough room for us. It was only now that I realized that Zachary was missing.
Oh, fuck. What do we do now? Chris asked, his voice full of terror.
We stay here for now. It should buy us some time to use that beacon to call for backup,
Carlton said, failing to keep the anxiety out of his voice.
You saw what that fucking thing did to Corey, Russell, Amy, and I hope not Zachary. It would be wise to try to escape the area first to avoid more bloodshed, I said.
Carlton sat up and glared at me. Jack put a hand on his shoulder to signify for him to leave it. Jack turned to face me, who was still paralyzed from the waist down, lying in my own blood. I was incredibly uncomfortable, but the others were able to stop most of the bleeding that would have killed me.
Carlton, I think we need to accept the fact that we are all going to die here. I mean, the thing is ruthless and...
He cut off, sounding a little nervous.
And what? Jack. And what? Fine. I encountered the thing before, okay? I saw what it did to my father and my granddad.
We all stared at Jack with a look of shock.
I went hunting when I was 10 with my granddad and father.
We heard our mother calling to us, but we were too far into the woods for her to be around. Dad decided to go and see if she just came looking for us. I hid behind a stump with my granddad. When my dad went to see, a large creature came out. It was the exact same creature as what we just saw, but it had antlers. My dad tried to run from it, but it got to him, tearing him apart and eating his flesh. Me and my granddad were in shock. My granddad grabbed his gun and shot it twice in the head, and he blew its antlers off. I then saw him load up a strange bullet and shoot it into the creature's chest. It caused the creature to screech in pain and fall back. My granddad told me to run as I heard him shoot the hell out of that thing, and then heard flesh being torn apart. I made it back to my house, and we called the police. I saw them dragging out of the woods what was left of my granddad and father. Jack looked around nervously at the group.
To understand what we're dealing with, I need to tell you the legend of the Wendigo.
Charlotte was doing her best at changing my bandages so I wouldn't be so uncomfortable.
The Wendigo? You mean that myth about a creature that can mimic other voices, along with being an incredibly dangerous hunter? I asked doubtfully.
You know, that's not what I expected it to look like, Carlton added.
You must be joking, right? Nobody's seen a Wendigo and survived to tell the story, which is why I suggest we give up now. Unless...
Jack trailed off.
Unless what?
I asked. My voice was filled with anxiety.
Unless there's something in my granddad's journal. You know, he had a cabin in the area, and he always told me stories about the Wendigo, so maybe he knew more than he was letting on.
How far is it? Carlton asked with a grim expression.
It should be a few miles out north from here, Jack answered.
I'm going to stay with Kobe. You and Carlton go and find the cabin,
Charlotte said.
Okay, Kobe, give me the revolver. And Chris, you are coming too,
Jack added, clearly not wanting to fuck around. Chris got up without hesitation and headed towards the opening. I handed Jack the revolver with all the bullets I had on me. Within a few minutes of packing, the three of them left, me and Charlotte. It was about midnight, but we were still wide awake, too afraid to fall asleep. We heard loud footsteps outside, followed by snarling. Charlotte picked me up and hid me in a crevice in the rock and pushed me in so I could hide. She put her finger to her lips and walked away towards the exit of the space. I had no choice but to watch in horror what happened next. The Wendigo walked through the waterfall into the space. It was hunched over, and its mouth was agape, revealing two more rows of teeth. Its tongue was long and forked like a snake, and I could only now see the little stubs that were once antlers on its head. Charlotte rushed out of the corner of the space, screaming and jumping on its back, shoving a large hunting knife into the creature's neck. The creature screeched in pain as it threw her to the ground, promptly pulling out the knife. The Wendigo looked at her and snickered as it grabbed her by the throat and lifted her off the ground. I had to watch my friend die, knowing I couldn't do anything to save her. I sobbed quietly as I saw Charlotte go limp. The creature then promptly tore her in half, then devoured her.
Kobe! I heard Jack scream. In here!
I yelled back, still sobbing. It was daylight now, and they were all back, looking over the pools of blood on the floor and bits and pieces of flesh that were once Charlotte. Chris bent over the gruesome sight and sobbed loudly. I joined him in sobbing, crying until I couldn't anymore.
We need to leave, now, Chris said. After he was finished sobbing. The cabin is safe for us to go to. We found Zachary. What was left of him, he said, looking down at his shoes, now stained with dried blood. All right, we can't stay here anymore. That thing might be back any minute to kill us all, Chris said, sounding out of breath.
That was when I noticed my current condition. Since I couldn't feel anything below the chest, I realized my pants were soaked with piss. The others noticed. I could see them turning away from the putrid smell. They lifted me up and walked out of the space, the warm sun beaming on my cold face. My vision started to fade now, realizing I never slept for 2 days. I slowly closed my eyes and faded into sleep. I woke up on the couch in an old, abandoned cabin. It was obvious it was neglected. The paint was peeling, weeds were growing out of the cracks in the floorboards, and several mice scurried across the floor into a hole large enough for a man. I grabbed the arm of the couch and pulled my body up, still paralyzed from the chest down. I saw Chris walk into the room with a bottle of water in hand.
"Oh, good. You're finally awake," he said, sitting down next to me on the couch. "We, changed your pants while you were sleeping. I do have some news now, though," Chris added,
his expression grim. What? I asked. We found Zachary, and he is... was alive the last time I saw him.
What?
I was surprised by my own volume. He's in the other room, but he's in very bad shape. He's not going to make it much longer, Jack said, looking down at the rotting floorboards. He lifted me up and carried me into the next room to see him. I damn near screamed at the sight of him. His jaw was loosely hanging off his face by a few strands of muscle and tendons. One eye was completely missing, while the other was hanging from a socket. Deep red cuts were all along his body, and his entire left arm and right hand were missing. And his legs were... Well, his legs were missing below the kneecaps, and his throat was slit. Carlton and Jack walked into the room with a revolver in hand.
We're gonna have to, Kobe. He's in too much pain.
Zachary whimpered loudly as Chris aimed the revolver at his head and fired. He wasn't in pain anymore. The fact that we had killed one of our valued teammates was hard on our mental health. Carlton sat on the old couch with his face buried in his hands. Chris was sitting on the floor next to me, and I was laid against the wall, hoping that we could find something from Jack's grandfather's journal, but it was only a chance now.
I'm back, Jack said, walking to the front door. That should be locked. Carlton, you fucking idiot. I'm sorry, okay? I forgot. You need to barricade this now. Anyway, in the meantime, I was able to get some food with a bow and some arrows I found. So we have some food.
What kind of food is it?
Chris asked, standing up and dusting off his cargo pants.
It's a rabbit. The good thing is it should keep us fed until rescue shows up.
What does it matter? I said dryly. We're all gonna die anyway due to that thing before rescue would even show up to get us. Carlton had activated the beacon before we could stop him. His mind was decaying incredibly fast, and he was verbally lashing out at certain times. Jack plopped himself onto the couch next to Carlton and slouched back into the old cushions. He threw an old brown book with a strap on it onto the ground.
Kobe, you read this while me and the other two work on some protection for the doors, okay?
Jack asked, sounding like he was in a hurry.
Yeah, of course, I replied back.
I opened the book and started reading. Journal Entry 1. All my studies on the Wendigo over the years are finally starting to pay off. I found tracks, real tracks, that would not match up with any other animal in these woods. They were long and humanoid, but definitely not human. I followed them, but with no results, just ending at a space underneath a waterfall, then totally disappearing. I hope I can find a way to kill it, to stop all these missing person cases, children being lured out of their homes and never seen again. Journal Entry 2. I was speaking to the First Nations tribe, and they told me multiple stories of the Wendigo. One story in particular about its being able to shapeshift and mimic voices. Now, the mimic voices I heard of, but not shapeshifting. This would open up a whole lot more questions about the Wendigo. Like what if I had encountered it several times without knowing, or even what if it replaced one of my family members? Journal Entry 3. There is a way to kill it, if it doesn't kill you first. Its weakness is fire. If you douse the area with something flammable, then set it ablaze. Once you set the area on fire, shoot the ever-living hell out of it. Journal Entry 5. I crafted a single flammable bullet, which I will take with me on a hunting trip I'm going on with my family. If that thing comes after us, the bullet won't kill it, but it would delay it long enough for at least Jack to escape. If someone is reading this, I'm sorry for the circumstances while you might be reading this. I tried my best to try to guide myself through these procedures, but I never thought about others who might read it. Another way you could delay it is shooting it with a silver bullet, kind of like a werewolf. It could buy you a few minutes. Journal Entry 5. I made an important discovery. There was more than one Wendigo. There are a total of 3 Wendigo. I was able to do some research and found out what each of them were called. The King, a very powerful Wendigo, the largest of its kind. The Classic Wendigo, looks as expected when you think of a Wendigo. And the Stalker, a very fast and dangerous Wendigo. It has a very dense exoskeleton, but the fire should still do the trick with it. It also has a very acidic saliva that could burn through iron in a matter of seconds. If you are reading this, it means I'm dead, but I wish you the best of luck. And Jack, if you are reading this, I love you. Don't ever forget that. I close the book immediately and yelled for Chris. Get as much flammable shit as you possibly can, now. He nodded and headed down into the basement. Jack walked into the room with a bottle of bourbon.
Here, I found this in the bedroom. It should help with the pain for a little while, he said.
No, douse the whole area with all the flammable shit you can find, I said.
He nodded. There was a can of oil that could be useful, he replied. Carlton found some old rags and littered them around the cabin. Chris found a can of gasoline in the basement and was pouring trails around the apartment. I was loading up the revolver, and Jack found another bottle of whiskey he was dousing the porch with. Jack started laughing and turned to me, revealing a double-barrel shotgun.
This should keep him in the flames, he said, loading up 2 slugs into the barrels.
Carlton walked into the room with a frightened look on his face.
You all need to see this, he said, his voice full of anxiety.
We all looked out the window and saw a massive exodus of wildlife. Wolves were running, bears were running, and the skies were covered in birds. This was new. This never happened before. We saw it. No, we saw them. The 3 of them. The one that killed most of us, and the 2nd one, which was taller, with massive antlers, and this one was white. The 3rd one was on all 4s. It was jet black, with a human skull-like head. This one was on all 4s, and 6 large spikes shooting out of its back. Its mouth was agape, revealing an orange glowing saliva-like substance. Its eyes also glowed the brightest of them. Another difference was that it had an exoskeleton, almost armor-like in appearance. The black one started to walk on all 4s up to the porch. Jack gripped a Molotov to his chest, muttering a prayer. Carlton closed his eyes, suppressing his tears. Chris grabbed me and hid me behind the couch. The barricade would hold for a few minutes. It would give us more time to coordinate, at least. I heard the unmistakable sound of splintering wood at the door. The barricade started to come loose as the pounding increased. It tried smashing the window, but the metal bars kept it secure. Thank God for that. The barricade fell apart, all the items sprawling across the room as the door smashed open. And right then, we had to accept that we had to do this. We had to face them. I hid behind the couch and started to pray that Jack's grandfather was not wrong. Too many people were already dead now. I looked to the steps to see the figures in the tree line approaching. We heard footsteps outside the front door and back door. Chris ran to the back door, putting his full weight against the door with a thud. Carlton grabbed the Molotov and hid behind the small kitchen island, peeking his head out the occasional time to make sure everyone was in position. Jack waited next to the front door with the other Molotov. The thuds were getting louder, and they were now at the door. I took a deep breath and slid behind the couch. There was a loud bang at the back door, then the front door, and then the back again. Chris was struggling to keep it closed when all of a sudden, Chris flew across the room into a wall, destroying it, and falling to the ground, clutching his side.
The back door was wide open, and the black Wendigo walked into the house, looking straight at Chris, who promptly flipped it off. The Wendigo charged at him, and Jack busted out of his hiding spot, throwing the Molotov right at the Wendigo's face. It screeched in pain as the front door flew open. The fire was spreading rapidly across the floor, and the other two Wendigos were backing away from the door. Carlton ran outside after the other two with a second Molotov in his hand. Chris came and grabbed me, and he walked me out past the now dead Wendigo. He threw me onto the ground outside and collapsed beside me. Carlton ran back to us with a revolver in his hand. "Did you get them?" I asked him. He stared back at me, coldly, before shooting Chris in the head, then aimed the gun at me. He started grimacing as he struggled to drop the gun.
"What have you done?"
I yelled at him through my sobs.
"What has to be done?"
He aimed the gun at my head again and pulled the hammer down. Jack rushed out of the cabin, tackling Carlton to the ground. Carlton threw Jack into a tree. I grabbed the revolver that was lying on the ground and shot Carlton in the head 6 times. He turned back to me and smiled cruelly, his eyes now glowing yellow. He walked up to me, his jaw dislocating like a python, his hair falling off his head. He crouched down beside me and put his hand on my chest, his fingernails growing incredibly long. Jack jumped onto his back, driving his hunting knife into his eye. The creature howled in pain as it no longer resembled Carlton. It resembled a humanoid hybrid-looking thing. It shed its disguise fully after Jack stabbed it in the neck. It was the King Wendigo. A bruised and scratched Carlton emerged from the bushes, throwing the Molotov at the wounded Wendigo. It screeched in pain as the skin melted off its bones. It looked at me and charged towards me again, but this time another Wendigo emerged from the bushes, tackling the king. I only now realize it was in a battle for dominance. After seeing its leader wounded, it would try to kill to become the alpha. The Wendigo grabbed the flaming king by the antlers and smashed it into a tree. The king grabbed the smaller Wendigo by the fist and broke the smaller one's arm. The smaller one tried to retreat, but it was too late. The king grabbed it and tore its broken arm off. I never thought I would be rooting for the smaller one, but I secretly was, because I wanted to kill that one myself. The smaller one rammed the king into the burning cabin, but the king grabbed the other one by the jaw and shoved its face into the flames. The smaller one kicked the king in the stomach and ran behind the weak king and kicked it into the flames. It grabbed a long wooden stake from the burning wreckage and rammed it into the king's chest, knocking them both to the ground. The smaller one was crawling out of the fire while the king was towering over it. It stomped onto the smaller one's head, splattering a black and green liquid everywhere. Well, shit. Now we have to deal with the king by ourselves. The king was limping out of the flames with no skin at all. It was a truly horrifying sight, seeing its quivering organs. I lifted the revolver and shot the last few bullets I had into the king's exposed heart. The heart leaked a black fluid as the king clutched its chest. It looked at me with its one good eye as it limped towards Jack, who was frozen with fear. Carlton rushed out and drove the knife into the king's kneecap, taking its leg off. It hopped around on its good leg as it kept trying to shapeshift into different animals to escape us, but it couldn't because of its injuries. Jack pushed the king onto the ground and drove the knife into its good eye, completely blinding it. It screeched in pain as it tried to grab us. Carlton drove a sharp piece of wood into its neck as it made small, whimpering noises. It vomited black fluid all over the ground.
"Wait!"
it screamed in an unhuman voice.
"I only try to survive."
It managed to get those words out while it vomited black fluid in between. Carlton grabbed an old hatchet off the ground and hacked its head off.
"Survive that!"
Jack yelled at the decapitated creature. We heard the sounds of a helicopter off in the distance.
Jack grabbed the king's head and threw it into the flames. I only noticed that Chris's body was stomped out. I only noticed that Chris's body was stomped on during the Wendigo fight earlier. His head splattered just like the smaller Wendigos. Things went better from here. The rescue team found the body of the Wendigo and called a group of paranormal investigators who told them to keep it from the public. So instead, we lied and said a pack of wolves attacked us. But we knew the truth. And honestly, that was all that mattered for now. We gave everyone who died a funeral. The doctors were able to fix my spine where that thing slashed me. I can't run yet, but I'm working on that. We all quit the search and rescue jobs afterwards. I can never forget that creature that attacked us. I can never forget my friends who were killed, knowing nothing but the fact that what killed them enjoyed it. I will never go into the woods again, but I do not think that would stop it. I hope you can learn from this to defend yourself against a Wendigo if you come across one. If you do, I will pray for you. Good night, and goodbye. I walked through the hiking trail as I usually did, but this time was different. A feeling of dread growing as I walked deeper off the trail with Damien and Andrew.
Hey, Sam, I think we should turn back now. This doesn't seem right,
Andrew said, his black curls hanging loosely onto his pale and freckled face. Damien pushed on through, which made us more compelled to follow him deeper. I grabbed a large splinter of wood that was on the ground. Strange, I thought. It was covered in a black and green substance. We approached the area faster now. It was a downhill slope until we saw the skeleton of the burned camp. There was a field of grass around 200 feet on each side, with the sunlight breaking through the bright green leaves on the trees above. The cabin itself was burned to the ground, with very few walls still standing.
Hey, Sam, go check the cabin. I'm going to look around for anything that could prove what Colby said was true,
Damien said. Colby was his uncle, who claims to have been attacked by something in the woods called the Wendigo. People called him insane until we heard about it. We volunteered to do it and try to clear his name. Damien was the most motivated, though, mostly for the reason you think. The cabin was charred and black, when it would have once been a beautiful dark oak wood cabin for a family. Andrew threw pieces of wood outside until he came across six protruding spikes.
Hey, we found something, Damien,
Andrew screamed, either with fear or excitement, perhaps both. What we saw was the corpse of something clearly not human. Its skin was pooled like rubber at the bottom of the splintering cracks of wood. It had a human skull-like head, pure black, but that was probably from the fire. It had six large spikes protruding from its back. I turned on my phone, ready to take a picture of it, before I heard a click of a revolver behind me.
"What are you doing here?"
asked a rough and raspy voice. I turned to see a man with dark brown hair down to his shoulders, with strings of white hair. His eyes were bloodshot, and he was hunched over, rocking back and forth on a cane.
"Put the gun down, man,"
Damien yelled. The man turned to him, and instantly his face lit up with recognition.
"Damien,"
the man said. Automatically, a look of sadness struck his face.
Uncle Colby?"
he replied. Colby turned back instantly and started to walk back into the forest with a bit of a limp.
"Hey, sir, wait!"
He turned around instantly and looked at us.
"Leave, please,"
he pleaded. I walked over to him, and he backed away. He looked at me with sad eyes and walked forward.
"Who the hell are you?"
he asked, not seeming to care about any of this.
Andrew turned to the tree line and just stared at something in the distance. Kobe walked up beside him to see what he was looking at. He turned away and shrugged, taking out a silver flask. Andrew just kept staring, seemingly fixated on something in the tree line.
"Is your friend okay?"
he asked, the first time he was showing actual concern.
I guess so.
Damien trailed off, looking at the muddy earth covering his boots.
"Oh, don't tell me you're insane too,"
Kobe groaned. "What? No. I was just... What are you doing here?" Damien asked. He seemed aggravated ever since Kobe came back.
"Paying respects," he said, looking down at the faded chalk outlines on the ground, which could have been the place of a body.
I looked over the chalk outlines, running my fingers across them.
"Oh, so now you're paying respects. We can handle this on our own, Uncle Kobe. We had those incendiary rounds you gave us, and I thought you said you would never go into the woods anymore,"
he yelled. Kobe just walked up to the chalk outline and dropped a single red poppy onto the ground.
"It was his birthday today, you know,"
he said, not at all seeming affected by this sudden outburst.
"You never told me why you came here,"
he said, not even looking at him.
"We were doing this to clean your name. Damien didn't want you to be called insane,"
I said, jumping in.
"Oh, so that's why. Jesus Christ, I'm tired of this. Damien wants to prove the Wendigo exists. He's just using you to think that he's doing this for me,"
Kobe said. It seemed like Damien pulled this kind of thing before.
"Shut the hell up,"
Damien screamed.
"Oh, but it's true, isn't it?"
Andrew said, glaring at Damien.
"Fine. It is, okay?"
he said at last. Andrew threw the boards he was holding onto the ground and started to walk away into the forest.
"No, don't,"
Kobe screamed, as Andrew put up the middle finger and walked into the woods out of sight. I grabbed a hold of the skeletal corpse of what once would have been a Wendigo, and was automatically met with an orange ooze spraying onto my face as I dropped back, covering my eyes and screaming. It was burning into my face until I saw Kobe grab a rag and shove it into my face. The burning sensation soothed almost instantly.
"How did you know that would work?"
Damien asked, examining the creature.
"Jack's grandfather's journal said they had acidic saliva. This solution was something I came up with to help soothe the sensation,"
he said, lighting a cigarette.
"It's getting dark. I have a campsite not far back. You can come with me if you want,"
Kobe said, not even looking at us.
Yeah, sure,
Damien said, finally. We hiked for what felt like hours, the silver moonlight shining through the branches above us. The low-hanging fog gave everything an eerie feeling. The trail finally ended in a small clearing with a single tent and a dying campfire. A man with red hair stood up from the slump he was sitting on.
"I wish we thought of a different way to honor them,"
he said, throwing firewood into the flames, causing orange embers to explode into the misty air.
"That's Carlton,"
he said, pointing at the man. He collapsed onto a stump and started to bow his head, looking at a crumpled picture of a few men and women. Carlton looked at Kobe, who was staring into the woods behind him. There was a lot of rustling coming from the woods, and Carlton picked up a shotgun and loaded it. A massive flock of birds burst out of the woods, knocking Carlton off balance and shooting off the shotgun in the process.
"Oh, Christ!"
Kobe screamed as a tree fell over in the distance, followed by a demonic scream. Kobe loaded his revolver with incendiary rounds and hid behind a log. He jabbed a finger to a nearby stump, and I hid behind it. There was a loud, thumping noise. It kept getting closer and more frequent. Carlton peeked around from his hiding place and fired the shotgun. The creature was the same one that we thought was dead earlier. It rushed onto Carlton, tearing him limb from limb. Kobe shot the creature in the back 6 times with the incendiary rounds. It turned to face him, blood dripping from its skull-like jaws.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Standing on top of what was once Carlton, but now a bloody mess of organs and entrails. It charged towards Kobe, but before it could reach him, Kobe blinded it by shooting it in the eye. It screamed as it backed away before falling into the campfire. It grunted in pain as it was swiftly executed by another man with a short beard. He hacked away at its neck with an axe until it stopped moving completely.
I told you we shouldn't have come back here,
he yelled with a broken voice. Kobe just sat beside Carlton and cried in despair.
Jack, we gotta get out of here, he said at last.
Shouldn't be a problem,
Jack said, sitting next to the bloody mass.
I could have saved him,
Kobe said, sobbing quietly. Jack stomped onto the campfire, extinguishing it. I grabbed a hold of the revolver and started a hike with Jack, Damien, and Kobe. We hiked into a clearing with 2 cars sitting plain in the middle of the muddy field, moonlight shining down onto the windshields of the car. I walked up to the brown caravan that Jack walked up to. He unlocked the car, and we got inside. He looked at me, tears welling in his eyes.
I told you we shouldn't have come here,
he said at last.
What will happen to Carlton?
I asked at last. He turned again to look at me.
We have to tell them that he was mutilated by a bear. We signed an agreement to never talk about what was in that woods. But it's clear that Kobe did not follow through with that order. He was deemed insane and was sent to a mental hospital for 6 months. He's never been the same, he said,
lighting a cigar and blowing the smoke out of the car. There was a rustling in the bushes. Kobe turned around with his gun, aiming it blindly into the bushes. It was just Andrew. He seemed frantic, claiming he saw something in the woods. Myself and the others decided to just tell him.
We need to get out of here, now,
he yelled. Kobe walked behind him into the blue truck. It's been 2 weeks since then. I still see Carlton being ripped to shreds, but I think I'll recover with time, if I have time. I think I'm turning into a monster. I look into the mirror every morning, and my eyes are bloodshot. I have nightmares, and I'm getting incredibly skinny, no matter what I eat. I call my doctor every day, but he says it's related to stress. But I don't think that stress comes with a voice. It first started about 2 weeks ago, when I was making myself some toast.
Samuel Monroe,
it said, in a deep, inhuman voice. I threw my toast across the room before I collapsed to the ground. I felt a sharp pain in my side, so I lifted my shirt to see that there were 3 large bite marks. But something else was amiss. My blood was darker than usual. This made me panic more. So clutching my side, I drove to the emergency room. The doctor walked into the room with a grim look on his face.
It looks like you have extremely high blood pressure, she said, looking at the clipboard in her hand. Might I ask why there are bite marks on your torso?
She asked.
I don't remember why they're there,
I said, truthfully.
Well, I want to give you some medication to bring that blood pressure down, so in the meantime, try not to eat anything too salty,
she said. This time she was looking at me with a hint of skepticism in her eyes. After going to the drugstore to get my prescription, I got a call from Damien.
Hey, man, I haven't heard from you in a while,
he said, sounding exhausted. Yeah, I'm okay. And you?
Still traumatized, but what can you do? Do you feel guilty? I was aware it was a mistake to go, yes, but nothing that happened after that was my fault.
Well, guess what? It was your fault. If I'd known about that monster in the woods, which you did, don't play dumb with me, Damien.
I'm not playing dumb, Sam, for God's sake.
Yes, you are. Kobe said the same thing. You were obsessed with the Wendigo since you were a child.
Yeah, that's true. But I never imagined that it was real.
Then why did you send us to the woods? I screamed. There was a click on the other end, and I decided to just go to the diner for lunch. While I was eating, I felt a ravenous hunger. Nothing could fill me, no matter how much I ordered. People grew concerned over how much I was eating. I was kicked out after a while because I was acting violent towards our guests. I don't know why I did that, but I'm growing more scared. With all the voices in my head, something is definitely wrong here. And it all started when that thing sprayed me with its saliva. Was it possible that I was turning into a Wendigo? No, that couldn't be it. But Wendigos exist, so it couldn't be out of the question. I decided I would call Kobe in the morning for some help. In the meantime, I tied myself to the bed. I prayed I wouldn't lose control of myself, at least until I knew people would be safe from me. I felt the phone vibrate in my hand. It was Kobe. Kobe, thank God you called back. Listen, I need some serious help.
Listen, I don't know you too well, kid. If you have problems, you might need to take them up to a doctor.
I need help from you, specifically.
What could I possibly do that a trained medical professional can't?
I've been acting very strange lately. I've been hearing voices telling me to do awful things. And these things that are wrong with me can't be detected by the doctors.
Okay, stay where you are. I'm coming. What's your address?
I gave him my address.
I'm coming. Now, do not leave.
I hung up and sat in the chair in my bedroom.
You know he can't help you,
the voice said.
You are bringing death upon many people,
it said. You're wrong. I won't let you kill anyone, I said to the room.
Oh, well, I'm afraid you won't have a choice. I've been chipping at your sanity, causing you to do what I want. And sooner or later, you will.
It said, with an excited tone. I threw myself onto my bed and just watched TV for a while. There was a rapid knocking at my door. It was Kobe. I unlocked the door. He looked at me with a grim expression. I gestured him in, and he sat on the living room sofa. He looked at the polished black TV screen, just staring. He exhaled sharply and looked at me.
Did you hurt anyone?
He asked. No, at least not yet.
Good, good. Listen, this is going to be hard to hear, but I'm going to put it plain and simple. The only way to get that thing out of your head is to...
He was lost for words.
I read for a while and found nothing about this. I need to, or you, need to kill yourself.
What? I screamed. He got up and put his hand on my shoulder.
I know it's hard, but you need to think about the greater good here,
he said in a gentle tone. He exhaled again, turning his back to me. He lit a cigarette and gestured to the door.
This is not you, Samuel,
he said, taking out a revolver. He gestured to the car. We rode in silence for what felt like an hour until we finally reached the plains.
Get out here,
he said, a strange coldness in his voice. I walked into the golden yellow wheat field, him following close behind. He pointed with his revolver towards a hole in the middle of the field.
I couldn't save the others, but I can save them,
he said. I looked at him, and all of a sudden I got a splitting headache again.
You will not let him do this to you. I know it,
the voice said. I looked to the warm sky as I kneeled down to let Kobe shoot me.
Fine, I'll do it myself,
the voice said excitedly. I felt an indescribable amount of rage. I jumped up, grabbing Kobe by the arm and ripping it completely off. He screamed in agony as I smiled in satisfaction.
Please don't do this. I can help you,
he pleaded, lying in a pool of his own blood. The feeling was riveting, him begging for mercy while I knew it had no effect. I looked at him. He was writhing in pain on the ground. He started to try and crawl to his arm. I slammed my foot hard down onto his back, causing a loud cracking noise. He screamed again, this time louder. Why was he so stupid to take me out here? I smiled again. He looked up in terror.
I can't move my legs,
he screamed again, but this time it was muffled as I placed my hand over his mouth. Tears started to well in his eyes. I shoved my hand into his throat, and the screaming was down to just a small, whining noise. I grabbed what I could grasp in his throat and pulled all the contents out. He was dead in a matter of seconds. His blue eyes, once full of life, stared into the sky lifelessly. The feeling of taking his life was riveting. So now, I had a new question. Who was next? I slammed against the door to Jack's apartment, begging him to let me in.
What did I just do? Why did I do it?
I had these questions that I knew he would have to answer to.
Please let me in,
I yelled, falling to my knees as the voice in my head mocked me.
You need to know something, Samuel,
the voice said cheerfully.
I need to take you to the beginning of all of this, in the woods with Jack 30 years ago,
the voice said again. Automatically, I was transported to a dense forest in autumn. I looked around and saw two men laughing with a 12-year-old boy running along with them.
What is this?
I asked.
Jack, his father, and grandfather.
Why are you showing me this?
Hold on. Let me watch my favorite part of this memory.
There was a creature hiding in the bushes calling out to the younger man. The man walked over and was promptly torn apart. The older man told the kid to run while he loaded an incendiary bullet into his rifle and shot the creature in the arm, causing it to scream in pain. It grabbed him by the throat and threw him into a tree. It walked towards him and smiled, saying,
"A deal's a deal, Philip."
It put its hands on his chest, and he slowly started to deform, eventually turning into the creature that killed Carlton.
What the hell is happening?
I screamed at the forest.
I realized how powerful the Wendigo was, and I decided I would want to try and harness that power for myself. So I made a deal with the King Wendigo, which made me offer up my firstborn son to be killed and eaten for sustenance,
the voice said cruelly. I looked at where the old man once was. The other Wendigo was dragging a mutilated corpse from underneath a rock and gave it the illusion of being an old man.
You monster! That was your son!
I yelled at it again, tears welling into my eyes. I looked into a small rain puddle at my feet and noticed one of my eyes looked like that of a viper's. I curled up into a ball and sobbed.
We have much to do now, Samuel,
it said, as I woke up back in my own bed, covered in blood. I noticed that my fingers appeared longer than before. I looked into the mirror and saw that my head was almost completely without hair. My teeth were becoming crooked and jagged. I had 6 short bones protruding from my back. I went to my closet, pulled out a shotgun, and shot myself in the face. Pain. Nothing but pain. And the voice saying,
"Big mistake."
I noticed I was thrown out of my body. I was a spirit now. My face was completely missing. I watched in horror as I saw my own body start to twist and contort into a hunched shape. It took the full form of the Wendigo that killed Carlton, the voice using my body to manifest itself now. And I could do nothing but watch. Summer heat blared through the crevices of the shut blinds of my office. I looked at the see-through glass doors with the black sprawling words, "Detective Luke Harrison." I always liked that title. It gave me a sense of completion. Grayson opened the door, letting in Jack. I told him to take a seat, and I leaned back in my chair, creaking under my weight. I grabbed a letter from underneath my desk and handed it to Jack.
"Thanks, Luke," he said.
He looked at the plaque on my desk and then stood up and started to walk out of the room. He turned back to me and asked,
"By the way, have you seen Kobe? I can't reach him at all, and the last time he sounded scared of something,"
he said, looking down at the polished tile floors.
"No, but I'll keep you notified if I come in contact with him," I replied, closing the open filing cabinet I pulled the envelope from.
Brandon burst through the doors, almost cracking the glass. The force was immensely strong.
"Jesus!"
I exclaimed. He slammed several photos on the table, along with a piece of flesh in a baggie.
"What the hell is this? And why is it on my desk?"
I asked, mortified at the heap of flesh in the baggie.
"We found it in the woods, next to a burnt cabin."
"First of all, why the hell were you at a cabin? And second of all, what the hell is this?"
"That's the thing. We already went to the specialist, and he said it's nothing he saw before. It's like it melted off something's bones."
"Do you know how crazy you sound?"
"Yeah, but this isn't an animal, and it isn't human. So that must make you wonder what the hell it is,"
Brandon said, grabbing some more pictures from his pocket and spreading them across my desk. The pictures revealed a hunched dark figure next to a white figure with massive antlers on its head. The pictures were dated back to 1976. I laughed when I looked at them.
"This piece of flesh matches up with the white one right there. We know this because the skin at the top of the flesh is pure white. Scanning shows that it's not relatable to any other kind of animal recorded in that forest. It's most definitely that ugly creature right here," he said, smiling.
I looked at him with a glint of curiosity in my eye. If this were the Wendigo of some sort, which I highly doubt, then the world would go ballistic. I decided we would investigate this outside of the law to prevent mass panic. I nodded to Brandon.
"Get Ricky to come with us. He's the expert on this supernatural stuff," I said to him.
He nodded, then collected the baggie and put it in a green plastic thermos with a purple triceratops on the front of it.
"Sorry, I had to use my son's thermos to get this past the front door."
"All right. Just meet me at Emerald Lake at 10 p.m. sharp. You hear me?"
He nodded, then walked out of the room. I looked over the photos on the desk. They were all labeled with specific dates and times over the 70s and late 80s. They were all taken around the area around the lake, so I thought this would be a place to find out for once and for all, to prove the myth was real. We couldn't tell anybody else, but in reality, It would really only matter to me to know that these monsters are real, and I might be able to make up something to keep people away from the lake. Grayson ran into the room, sounding out of breath.
They found a body in the grain fields,
he said, gesturing to the outskirts of the town. When we arrived, the sun was setting over the yellow grain fields. The police were scattered around, shattering the illusion of serenity. I walked through the waist-high grain to an area spattered in blood. There were copious amounts of blood on almost every grain. I walked over to the victim, his blood soaked into my boots. I kneeled beside him to get a better profile, my knees growing cold from the blood. His throat was missing. He was missing an arm, which one of the officers pointed to a heap of smaller bones and blood over about 12 feet from the body, so that must have been it. I almost threw up, and that says a lot about me. I saw so much in my 15-year career, and nothing matches up to this. I saw someone get hit by a train once, for God's sake. I finished getting my profile on him as the moon was beginning to rise and take the sun's place among the pink sky. I logged in my journal that his name was Kobe Theriault. I got a text from Brandon saying that he would be running about 20 minutes late to the meeting at the lake. He said it was because Ricky was going out of town to get some materials for investigating. I sighed, then texted back, okay, before driving back to the station. A large, black, hunched creature ran in front of my car. I slammed the brakes as hard as I could. I looked at the creature, and it looked at me. I was purely terrified at this moment. It grinned at me, with that skull-like head, as it slobbered back in orange glowing saliva, which caused the ground to smoke up underneath it. It had 6 large spikes shooting out of its back, with 2 red glowing eyes like rubies. It circled my car now. Screw this, I thought, and sped off back to town. I ran back into my house and slammed the door shut behind me, panicked. I sat on the couch and tried to dial Ricky, but my hands were shaking too much to press his name. I sighed and turned on the TV to try and calm my nerves. It was just a deformed bear, I thought, doubtfully. Something I knew I had to do was go to meet Brandon and Ricky at the lake. I had to know, once and for all, if what I saw was just some mutated bear or some kind of variant of Wendigo. I walked up to the fridge and pulled out a can of beer. I know that people say I have a drinking problem, and I acknowledge it, but in reality, I secretly love it. I chugged it down and laid back in my living room recliner, next to several empty bottles of whiskey and crushed beer cans. Ever since Lucy left me, I was never able to recover emotionally. I guess either way this night turns out, I don't care. I looked towards my trench coat that was sitting on a heap of dirty laundry. I went over, sniffed it, and then put it on. I took a cigarette and lit it over the food-crusted sink. I got a notification from my phone, 9:45 p.m. It was time to head out to meet the other guys. I took my pistol from the metal case on the counter and took 2 extra clips. I grabbed a large can of bear mace as well, along with a taser. I went to the door, then looked back at the mess of my house, closed my eyes, then left for the parking lot. I looked at the silver moon shining over the houses sprinkled across the countryside as I drove to the lake. I looked at my phone to see that I got another text from Brandon saying that Ricky got his equipment from his guy and that they were 15 minutes away. I was 20, but I thought they could have waited for another 5 minutes for the guy he tried to convince to get him to join him in his search. I looked at the gravel pathway that led to another pickup truck caked in dust. I saw Brandon and Ricky looking at me from the tree line. They waved to me as they started unloading large amounts of equipment from the back. They unloaded a large tripod and a cattle prod, and Ricky handed it to Brandon. He handed me a flash beacon and a fire starter. He himself grabbed 3 large tents and carried them under his arms. Ricky also grabbed a massive steel case and handed it to me. I followed behind Brandon as we walked deep into the surrounding forest. The lake was still as we walked to the rocky shore to set up the tents, while Ricky set up the camera equipment and I unlocked the metal case, which contained 3 flare guns and a large sniper rifle. I loaded up one of the flare guns and put it in one of the pockets of my trench coat. Ricky walked up next to me and grabbed a flare gun, while Brandon grabbed the sniper rifle. I walked over to a large rock which looked over the lake. Brandon took a light and started to walk around the shoreline, while Ricky took out a crystal and started to rub it against the tall spruce trees. I heard screaming from Brandon. I ran to him to see that there was a mutilated hiker hanging from a tree from his own intestines. I turned over onto my knees and began to vomit. Ricky ran over, and he fell onto the pebbles and started to crawl back. I took out my phone to call the police, but Brandon grabbed it out of my hand and pointed towards the tree line. "He's watching us," he said, under his breath. I looked towards where he was pointing to see. I saw 2 glaring red eyes staring at us from across the shoreline. I stood completely still and whispered to Brandon, barely moving my mouth, "Walk slowly to the truck. We are getting the hell out of here." He nodded and started to carefully walk back as I walked slowly in front of him to cover the movement. The eyes started to move as it started to retreat into the forest. I turned to look back at Brandon's progress, but he was gone. I started to panic now as I turned on my flash beacon to see a large, dark creature hanging above the body in the tree line. It looked at me with a rage in its eyes as it started to crawl down the tree. I was completely frozen with fear as it reached the ground, and that's when I realized it was the same creature as earlier. It drew back with a screech as Ricky shot a flare into its chest. It scratched me in the face as it turned to Ricky and charged towards him. Brandon ran back with the sniper rifle and shot a hole into the side of the creature's head. It turned towards him and snarled.
"I'm not stupid, but it appears that you underestimate my intelligence,"
it said in a deep, gravelly voice.
"My name was Philip McAfee. Well, I mean, this body was Samuel Monroe, but it's me who's in control,"
it said, giggling to itself. I turned towards Brandon and gestured towards the truck. He bolted to the truck, but the thing covered the ground between them, and what followed were horrifying screams and the tearing of flesh. His jaw fell at my feet. His ribcage fell at Ricky's, who stared completely in terror. The creature was licking Brandon's blood off the damp pebbles, while I was completely frozen in horror. Once it finished its meal, which was one of my friends, it got up on its hind legs and wrenched bits and pieces of clothing and a shoe.
"You must forgive me for my savageness, as I have not eaten for a few days now. You know I had a hard time lately with killing my own grandson and all. I think you know Jack. He was in your office earlier that day."
I looked down at the ground in even more sorrow as I dropped to my knees and put my hands over my head.
"I killed him after we met at your car, actually. I was on my way then when I came across your car,"
he said. I grabbed my handgun from my trench coat and shot his eyes out. He screamed in pain as he covered his eyes with his 2 front limbs. I gestured to Ricky to get to the truck. He slowly shook his head and pointed behind me. There were hundreds of red glowing eyes in the forest, and they were all getting closer. Ricky stood in front of me as the first of those creatures barreled down on him, ripping him to shreds. I ran into a cave, as the one who was a man named Philip blindly groped the air looking for me. They followed me through the passages of the cave, and I was just nearly avoiding them, until I came to a small alcove in the cave. I decided that it was my best chance to survive against them, so I shimmied myself through it. I found a small underground recess with a large pool of water that led into the lake outside. I thought about it, but then saw the creatures breaking apart the narrow opening. I made my choice and jumped into the pool of water. It led back outside onto the shoreline, and I made a beeline for the car. I slammed the door shut and started the car and began to drive away from the scene. When I got onto the main road, they decided not to follow me. I was so grateful I was able to escape, until I heard a growling noise behind me.
The white fluorescent bulbs above both of us buzzed loudly. The man in front of me stared blankly ahead. He showed no remorse. No emotion at all, actually. When we found him, he just stared forward, not saying a word. It was unsettling. Like a doll, the movements he did make were unnatural. When he ate, it felt like he was trying to imitate a human. His skin was discolored, and his eyes were a little too dilated. His mouth hung open, showing his rotted yellow teeth. His brown, stringy hair hung over his bruised forehead. No matter how hard I looked, he just never looked human. I stood up from the cold metal chair I was sitting on.
Samuel Monroe, correct?
He nodded his head slowly. He never broke eye contact.
Samuel, your fingerprints were found at 16 crime scenes. Two of those were near schools where several eyewitnesses confirm your appearance. My only question is,
how did I do it? He said. Coldly. No emotion detected. He pointed his finger at my badge. Your badge holds no authority over nature. It is natural for predators to hunt prey. I prefer to be at the top. While you may fancy yourself the top of the food chain, you are not. How can you be at the top when you kill nothing? It's about sending a message to the prey. They need to know their place, he said. This time smiling. It was so unsettling to see. It was so human, yet so far off at the same time. I shivered and he burst out laughing, a cruel laughter like a bully in a courtyard. I see you now know your place. You, sir, are nothing more than a tool used by the predators at the top of the food chain. I will get out of here, whether you let me out or not. He sneered, dragging his claw-like nails across the desk, creating a noise which caused me to wince in pain. I opened my eyes in a fury and pulled him out of his chair and up to my gaze.
You think this is some sort of sick game? Children are being mutilated outside their homes, I hissed.
He laughed as I threw him to the ground. He stood up quickly, too quickly. I placed my hand on my revolver, but decided it was not worth losing my job on this monster. I sighed and left the room as he gawked at me. There was still one person I could talk to about this. His name was Jack McAfee, a survivor of this chain of mutilations. I got in my car and drove off to the hospital to meet with him. The nurse was kind enough to lead me to his room. It was terrifying to see him in this state. He was hooked up to all the machines you could imagine. His face was bandaged up, only showing portions of a skinned red face. His lips were cracked and dry, breathing into a large white ventilator, which made a sound as it rose and deflated. He beckoned me with a three-fingered hand to sit next to him. I took a stool and sat down.
My name is Detective Matthew Corrin. I have a few questions, which you can write on this pad for me.
I handed him a notepad with a black Sharpie. He picked up the Sharpie with his other hand and started to place down random dots. Dots, line, line. Dots, line, dot.
line, dot, 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 line, line, dot, line, line. I stared on in confusion as he dropped the Sharpie and handed back the pad. He began to cough blood, and the machines began to blink rapidly. I took that as my cue to leave, as several nurses and doctors ushered in with their white coats flapping behind them. I exited the hospital and walked to my car when I heard a strange noise coming from the woods. It was so distinct, like the wind, but there was a thin sound between it. No, it was a voice. I leaned closer to the forested slopes of the hill the hospital stood on. I drew my handgun and aimed with my flashlight, hovering above the barrel. I saw something moving in the bushes.
"Show yourself,"
I yelled. The rustling stopped. From the bushes, I heard a soft whisper.
"Matt,"
the whispering voice said. I stared in confusion as I turned my back to the woods. I heard a twig snap loudly, and I whirled around in confusion as I turned back to the woods. I heard a twig snap loudly, and I whirled around with my gun aimed at the noise. I realized I could not take my eyes up of the forest, so I backed into my car, got in, and sped off back to the station. When I pulled into the station, I could immediately see that something was wrong. The tempered glass windows were smashed, and the patrol cars outside were vandalized. I got out of my car in a panic and ran inside. Everyone was dead. Blood and brain matter splattered across the walls like Picasso paintings. Organs were hung from broken portions of the roof. I couldn't scream. Whatever happened to them would happen to me if I did. I stepped carefully through the dismembered limbs of my fellow co-workers with tears in my eyes and my heart pounding. A hand grabbed my ankle, and I shrieked loudly. I turned to shoot the thing, but only realized it was my friend Henry, bleeding out on the ground. Half of his body was missing. He was only alive because the remaining portion of him was being held under the weight of a fallen vending machine holding the remaining organs, keeping him alive. I couldn't look at him like this, and turned my head away and fired my pistol. I looked back to see a smoking wound in his head from the bullet. I continued walking through the building, sobbing loudly, looking for survivors or people who needed to be mercy killed. One man had his head shoved through a window, with the glass shards sticking all the way through his throat. Another man was hanging from a vent by his intestines. I keeled over and vomited harder than I have before, until nothing but clear bile was spewing from my mouth. I gagged and choked on the putrid smell of rotting flesh. After 20 minutes of vomiting, I fainted. I woke up to find myself lying in the clear bile and quickly got up. It was dusk outside, and I realized that nobody came. Why would they? No one survived long enough to call for help, and we were in the countryside. I weakly crawled for the phone, only to realize that it was ripped apart, wires spewing out like the organs of my dead co-workers. I realized I needed to go to a nearby house to use their phone, so I ran outside and got into my car and drove off. I arrived at the household and knocked on the door. No answer. I knocked again, but then I heard a commotion going on upstairs. It sounded like they were struggling. I kicked the door open and ran upstairs to help, only to hear a window smashing. I burst in the room with my gun drawn, only to find the old couple dead on the floor, barely resembling a human. I looked out the window to see massive hoofprints in the frost-covered earth.
"Oh, Jesus Christ,"
I said softly. I walked into the kitchen to use the phone to call for help. I dialed 911 and waited for a moment for an operator to pick up.
911? What's your emergency?
I finished explaining how I was a detective and that there was a murder at the police station and an old couple by the name of Annie and Joseph Theralt.
Okay, sir. We're dispatching paramedics from your county now, but the police are coming from a different county, so they will take longer, okay? Can you stay where you are?
The operator asked me.
Yeah, I can stay here,
I said, my voice cracking with anxiety. I slumped onto the kitchen counter and began to sob again.
Why is this happening?
I had so many questions, but they were not being answered. But then I thought of something worse. What if the thing that killed the people in the police station made it to the city? I had to stop it, but I didn't know how. I looked at the notes that Jack had left me, and I realized something.
It was Morse code.
I googled the Morse code alphabet and realized what Jack was trying to tell me. WENDIGO. Normally, I would have called him insane, but after witnessing what had happened, I realized it made sense. Well, it mostly made sense, other than the fact that it was a mythical creature. All of a sudden, my eyes shot wide open, and I realized Samuel Monroe was not one of the bodies I saw at the station massacre. I waited for 2 hours for the ambulance to arrive, but it never did. I decided to investigate and grabbed an old shotgun off of the wall of the house. I realized it would have been illegal, but then remembered the mass murder of a whole town would be more illegal. So I decided to take one for the team. I walked down to my car, and seeing that the tires were torn from the axles, I noticed a bike hanging on the side of a torn-up RV in the driveway and took it. I pedaled quickly to the hospital. It was unmoved at the top of the massive hill. I noticed a shredded ambulance tipped on its side.
Oh, Christ!
I yelled as I ran to the ambulance, only to see the mangled bodies of the paramedics inside. I ran up the slanted hill road to the hospital to see people running and screaming from the hospital entrance. I took the gun off of my shoulder and pumped it. A man in front of me was tackled by something so fast it was a blur. In an instant, I noticed a massive clawed hand. Another person got into their car to drive away, but the thing landed on top of it from the trees. I saw it clearly now. It was 10 feet tall, with a brown fur mane running down its back, with long claws and deer head, with skin so tight it gave off the illusion of a skull. Its massive antlers had a 5-foot span. Its feet were chipped and cracked hooves. I shook my head and began blasting it with the shotgun. It hissed in aggravation and put its arm up to shield itself. I continued firing until it roared. It roared so loud, the windshields nearby shattered. It was a primal roar. The roar of an animal. It ran toward me, but recoiled back, screeching in pain. I looked back to see an overweight man in his 20s, with curly black hair and glasses, firing a revolver with the bullets leaving behind a trail of flames.
Get back now! Go where you still can!
He yelled. The creature retreated into the woods, and amongst the chaos, I was knocked over by a group of men. I saw the man walk up next to me and extend his hand.
The name's Damien. My uncle encountered something similar 2 years ago.
The snow was creating a deep white sheet on the forest floor. Kobe walked ahead of us while me and Damien followed close behind. We came to a campsite where there were deep claw marks etched into the spruce trees. The tents were gone, and all that remains to show it was a campsite was an ash-filled fire pit. Kobe knelt over and examined a dark brown stain on a piece of white cloth embedded in the fire pit.
Dried blood,
was all Kobe said. There were the sounds of twigs cracking behind us. We turned to see a rabbit running through the forest floor. Kobe sighed with relief, when all of a sudden a massive hand reached from the bushes and crushed the rabbit, leaving nothing but a red smear in the snow. The Wendigo revealed itself, towering over us at a height of at least 15 feet.
Well, Detective Matthew, didn't expect you to show up here. You can leave now, and I might give you a quick death.
That being said, I clenched my shotgun, and the thing snickered.
I jest. None of you are coming out of this alive. After I'm done with the last survivors, then we can finally move on to our bigger target. A food source for years.
It exclaimed. Kobe sneered, and Damien took an aiming stance.
Since Kobe killed our king, the spot was left open. I fought my way to the top, as usual. I will get to that city. I'm an apex predator. Something no one can beat.
It continued. Kobe began to show fear and took a single step backwards. The moonlight illuminated the massive antlers of the Wendigo and its shining yellow eyes.
Sam, you can fight it, can't you?
Damien yelled. The creature howled with laughter.
I was never Samuel. He lost control long ago. I was toying with you for fun.
It laughed, loud enough to break glass. It glanced back at us with a look of insanity. It took a wild swing at us. Kobe grabbed both of us and threw us to the ground as the Wendigo's arm swung over our heads. Damien fired his shotgun and the Wendigo reacted. It screeched so loud it made my ears bleed. It jumped up into the trees and began mocking us.
Kobe, you could have saved us.
The voice of an older man said.
Damien, why'd you let it take over?
A young man's voice said. I knew it was going to mock me next.
Matthew, why did you let me go with them? Why did you let me die?
It was my wife. I began to feel tears trickling down my face.
Hey, Matt, don't worry. It's just a trick to deceive you.
Kobe yelled, aiming his gun wildly around the trees above.
You cannot stop me from getting to the city.
It said in an older man's voice. Kobe screamed in anger and fired a shell into a tree, setting it ablaze. The Wendigo screamed and fell to the ground. It snarled like a rabid dog. It looked up, then retreated farther into the woods. Kobe sprinted into the woods after the Wendigo. Me and Damien followed close behind. The Wendigo jumped from another tree on top of me. Kobe grabbed it and hurled it into a spruce tree, the smoke filling the air as the fire spread into the forest.
You won't beat me,
the Wendigo said smugly. Kobe narrowed his eyes and Damien fired both bullets in the barrel of his shotgun, causing the Wendigo to fall over. Kobe took the axe off his back and charged forward. He slammed the axe into the bullet wound and began to pull down. The Wendigo screamed again, causing me to collapse to the ground, writhing and covering my ears in pain. Damien collapsed, unconscious from the pain.
You can't hurt a ghost,
Kobe said coldly. Before slamming the axe into the Wendigo's face. It grabbed him and smashed his head against a sharp rock, exposing the brains behind his head.
Then what did I just do then?
The Wendigo smiled. Kobe smiled right back.
Providing distraction.
A burning branch fell on top of the Wendigo. Kobe picked up the burning branch. I could see it begin to blister his hands. The thing about possessing something is that I can't feel pain, he said. He turned around and stepped on top of the Wendigo trying to retreat. There was a snickering before the next thing I saw was Kobe being slammed into the ground repeatedly, then thrown like a rag doll into the blazing trees. Damien jumped on top of the Wendigo and slammed the large burning branch into the Wendigo's neck. It grabbed him by the shoulder and stared into his eyes. He screamed before the Wendigo bit his head off. He ate Damien like a starving stray dog, blood and guts flying all around. It looked up at me and laughed. If I were to meet Satan himself, he would not compare to the true evil that was this beast. It picked me up by my head.
Your biggest mistake in life was thinking you could stop the inevitable. I am an apex predator. The world will know of our existence. We have been hiding for too long.
It said, its jawbone snapping like a cartoon skeleton. It opened its jaw wide, revealing two more sets of shining white sharp teeth. I grasped for anything with my limbs until my foot hit the strap of Damien's shotgun. I pulled it up and caught it in my hands. I fired the last shot into the Wendigo's mouth. It gagged and threw me back. I realized I had my hand on the end of the barrel, causing my hands to become blistered and red, so I stuffed it into the snow. The heat of the forest fire burned my face. I heard coughing in the distance. I got up to run, but realized that the Wendigo was missing. In its place, three appeared, much smaller than the other one. I closed my eyes and awaited the inevitable, but it never happened. Instead, I heard struggling noises and the snapping of twigs. A low growl was let out, and I peeked my eyes open to see what was going on. It was a massive, white Wendigo, just slightly shorter than the one we faced. Its antlers were cracked, and its eyes were swollen. It killed all three hostile Wendigo easily. It looked at me, and approached me on all fours. It looked me dead in the eyes, but something was different. It had soul-filled eyes. It extended a long, bony hand.
Matthew, it's Kobe. I'm getting too weak to keep on my human form. The body I possess is getting too close to the breaking point, so this needs to end fast, so I can die peacefully,
Kobe said. I looked in shock as he loomed over me.
I still have the strength and speed, but not for long,
he added. I nodded, and we looked around for the Wendigo.
He's this way. Trust me,
he said. He led me to a waterfall, marked off by decaying yellow and black police tape. There, in the mud below, massive hoofprints were shown lining the shore and up to the ledge of the waterfall. Kobe grabbed me and jumped over to the ledge of the waterfall. There was a large opening behind the water. It was pitch black. In the darkness, I noticed two glowing yellow eyes peering out from the darkness.
How dare you come back to their resting place? My team was tortured enough,
Kobe yelled. An inhuman noise responded, like the rapid clicking of a keyboard, but more organic. It slowly crawled out on all fours and smiled cruelly. Kobe stood tall, his broken antlers scraping on the rock ceiling.
You cared for her, didn't you? I know, because I witnessed you. She loved you, and you loved her. You dearly cared for Charlotte, didn't you, Matthew?
It laughed. My eyes widened.
No, you didn't,
I screamed. Kobe looked at me with an expression that could be related to that of shock. It all made sense now. I remember that day, Kobe was the leader of the search and rescue team that my wife, Charlotte, was in. They gave me the call one day. A man with red hair came and introduced himself as Carlton, and told me my wife was killed in a bear attack. I remember I fell into a spiral of alcohol and depression afterwards. I couldn't stand the pain anymore. I was outcast and shamed by her family for being a washed-up drunk. When the chain of murders began, I made a promise to find out who was behind it all. When we found the body of Detective Luke Harrison, I almost lost hope. That was until we found Samuel Monroe, alive but unresponsive in a ditch. I don't understand. His vitals and CT scans are fine.
Nothing is wrong with him,
the doctor said, spreading the files across his desk. I looked in shock. I remembered the last words he said to me. I only now remember them dripping with poison. I am an apex predator. I looked on in anger at the Wendigo, realizing the truth about my wife's death.
The one who killed your wife is dead. Such a shame you can't spew your poison-filled words upon its mangled corpse.
It snickered. Kobe charged forward, grabbing it by the antlers and throwing them both off of the waterfall. I began to feel a burning sensation in my chest as I had realized what I was feeling. I remember the morning she came to me with the positive pregnancy test. It was the day she left for the rescue mission. I knew this sensation was one I never felt before. It was pure, pure, unbridled rage and hatred towards the thing that Kobe was struggling against. Kobe fought the Wendigo with all the strength he could muster, but was badly losing. I realized I needed to help him finish this as the air grew thick with black smoke. The Wendigo had Kobe pinned to the wall. Kobe beat down on the hands holding him with little effect. I climbed down the wall quickly.
Hey! Up here!
I screamed, kicking loose rocks onto its head. It snarled and jumped up after me, but Kobe grabbed it by the ankle. He threw the creature into a burning tree.
Get them, my children!
It yelled, but to no effect. It looked all around with a panicked expression.
What do you think I've been doing for the past 6 months in this form? I've been picking off your army, one by one. When you die, there will be no more Wendigo to repopulate. I'm going to break the cycle,
Kobe said. The Wendigo looked at him with fury, and like a bolt of lightning, Kobe was on the ground and being torn to shreds, black fluid being sprayed everywhere. I saw a pointed branch lying on the ground. I ran to it and set it ablaze. Kobe was barely holding the thing off of him. I charged and jumped on its back. I slammed the burning wood into its jugular vein. It screamed and fell backwards. Its screaming turned to gargling. It stumbled backwards as Kobe struggled to get up.
Impossible. I am the apex predator.
It gargled, black blood pouring out of its mouth. Kobe stood up fully.
I'm sorry for your wife, Matt. I'll tell her you said hi,
Kobe said. I'll tell her myself, I replied. He looked at me, sadly, before weakly running and tackling the Wendigo into the flames. The screeching was unbearable as the skin melted off their bones. The screeching was silenced, and I saw Kobe stand for the last time. He threw the burnt head of the Wendigo out of the flames and at my feet. Kobe stood in the flames, clear that he wanted this. He collapsed, and a blue mist emitted from the corpse. I coughed and collapsed onto my hands and knees. I knew I had to tell the story of what happened. So I crawled into the cave entrance. That's where we are currently. I've been using the data on my phone to type all of this. I've told you my whole story of these events from start to finish. Now the smoke is getting thick outside of the cave. I hear my wife calling to me. I think I'll join her with all the others who suffered at the hands of the beast. It's time to rest for all of us. Sweet dreams.